Yesterday we talked about thinking, and you said mostly it's done with akusala citta. Of course, I understand, and with lobha. But it could be just lobha, liking things around us and thinking about the house or the garden. Or it could be I like my thinking, my own thinking.
I think that now we don't have to think that I am thinking, right?
No, but I still like thinking.
Really?
Even without thinking about it.
Really? At moment of thinking, is there any idea of I like thinking?
No idea, but I just like it.
So it falls away, and there's thinking about I like it.
Yeah. I don't need to think about it.
Yes, but
I can just like it.
But whenever you think that I like it just moment ago, it's not moment of thinking of what you like.
No.
But it's after thinking.
Because I talk now with you, so then I consider I like it. But when I'm walking or so, I don't think I like thinking, but so, I just like it.
So thinking changes.
Yeah.
From previous moment to this moment, I like thinking.
Yeah. Because we talk about
again.
It.
Yeah.
But when we don't talk about it.
I think that usually in daily life, everything goes naturally.
Yeah.
But after study Dhamma, there's the idea, thinking about I.
Yeah. After studying Dhamma, it's the idea of
I. Before that, there's no idea. I like it because at moment of eating, there's like of the food, but no idea. I like it or I like the food.
Yeah.
But after studying, there is the idea. I, somewhere, sometime, thinking about I.
Yeah. So that's regrettable or a pity?
No.
Or is it better?
No. Everything is Dhamma.
Yeah.
Remember this until any moment of understanding at level, any level.
Yeah.
Very, very natural.
The point is, Nina, I think that, like, the thinking yesterday, thinking about nice food or whatever, it's all gone. So now the thinking or the working out what happened, what kind of thing it is, but actually the reality is now thinking, trying to work it out, what that was that happened before or yesterday. So if we hadn't studied Dhamma, there wouldn't be the trying to work it out. It's just common, ordinary thinking. So it's the thinking now that can be known. Thinking, trying to work out, trying to understand, instead of just understanding, thinking now, it's just ordinary conditioned reality.
What about I like that, which just a moment ago, and now it's gone?
I think it's a kind of self-talk we engage all the time. There's a very strong notion of I.
And especially try to change it. From having some idea of Dhamma, but actually it's only moment of beginning to understand. Do not mind what it is, because it's there, conditioned already. That's why any reality, any moment, can be object of right understanding. But there is not enough right understanding to understand that. This is the point. That's why we read and we hear and we study and we consider a lot until it's moment of understanding whatever is there by not I, but by what you call or what is called sati. But we don't have to name it or call it because it's the moment of having such object. Unpredictable, uncontrollable, and it's gone. And panya is not enough to experience the moment when it's gone, see, but it's gone completely.
Understanding the idea of attachment to thinking, because I can understand attachment to different concepts, but attachment to thinking, what is that attachment to thinking?
It means that she likes to think.
Likes thinking this way.
Everyone thinks.
But she likes to.
But because of the concepts, thought about, or the idea of thinking itself.
Thinking is real.
Or is it my thinking?
No.
I like my thinking.
I don't think so much about it.
When one is watching TV, doesn't one like thinking?
The concepts.
One likes it.
One
yeah.
likes the one is desperate.
There is thinking.
Yes.
Without thinking, there's no concept.
Right.
So there is also like to have thinking of concept.
It's like I'm enjoying thinking.
Of concept, yeah.
But I think Nina's talking about the act of thinking, because some of the thoughts will be about happy things and some about things that went wrong, for example. But she still likes the thinking, the processing of the previous events in the day.
Yes.
And about now too.
It's accumulated. You know, it's conditions. And
not
I did that
thinking.
A long
yes.
time, my whole life.
But not only thinking, you like everything.
Everything. Yeah, not only thinking. But there's a lot of thinking in a day.
That is thinking.
Yes.
Even when there's not that kind of thinking that you're talking about, there would be other kind of thinking.
Yeah.
Right? Because,
yes.
yeah. Because for everyone, there's thinking all the time. But I think you're referring to a particular kind of thinking. It relates to thinking over what has gone before in the day.
And it's not you who like, it's as the it's attachment.
Of course.
And Sukin, what about when you enjoy telling someone about the movie you have seen? No attachment to thinking?
Attachment to
thinking about the story? Otherwise why
attachment
would you tell someone about the all the
story. Attachment
and
to the
thinking
story.
Thinking about it. You enjoy thinking about it, otherwise you wouldn't tell someone about it.
And without thinking there's no concept.
There's object of thinking, right? The different concepts. But to say that you enjoy thinking, the object has to be the idea of me thinking. The idea of thinking. I'm thinking about concepts. I'm not thinking about thinking about concepts.
But there's a lot of attachment to thinking about those concepts.
So the attachment are to concepts.
And thinking about them. Otherwise you wouldn't tell people about the whole story. It's the thinking about it, lots of attachment to thinking about it. You tell someone about the delicious meal you've had, this attachment to thinking about it.
I would say there's strong attachment to a certain object and therefore a lot of thinking about that object. But not necessarily attachment to liking to think about it. Just a lot of it.
Dwelling on the story about the delicious lunch. Thinking.
Because
enjoying,
strong attachment to the object.
To thinking about it. Thinking about those objects.
And actually what's behind the object of thinking. Don't you like thinking too? Or do you just like the object of thinking?
I think thinking, which Vina is referring to, is more like logical thinking. It's not like ordinary thinking. Thinking in a logical manner somehow assures that one is engaging in a productive activity. So it's one of the reasons why one has a strong attachment to that kind of thinking.
And it is as simple as, do you like to see now? Not the object, but the seeing itself.
So, Ajahn, you asked what's behind the object of thinking.
Thinking.
Thinking. And the logical, productive thinking. So productive, does that mean kusala?
Very worldly sense. Very worldly sense.
Because in a worldly sense, what we consider productive is quite different from in a Dharma sense.
I know what you're saying.
So now they're clinging to everything which is there.
But when we think about Dhammaya, then there are moments of kusalas, not all the time, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm just pointing out that what we consider useful or productive in a conventional sense is different from what is productive in a Dharma sense. That's all. If we hadn't heard the Dhamma and some beginning of understanding, the whole, I think it, hearing the Dhamma and some beginning to understanding, one pays much more attention to thinking and questions, certainly the process, and I like it, I don't like it, attachment, non-attachment, because without hearing the Dhamma, chances are there wouldn't be any thinking about what we're talking about. But I think the point that Jan was making earlier is that certain kinds of papancha or certain kinds of akusala thinking occurs because of having studied the Dhamma. Like before having studied the Dhamma, one is not analyzing, oh, what kind of thinking was it yesterday? Was it yet thinking with self-view or was it just with attachment? And actually, it's not kusala thinking, it's just a kind of proliferation, a kind of thinking with attachment, sometimes with self-view, that actually only arises because of having heard the Dhamma. Because otherwise, one just thinks about what one likes in a day, but one doesn't try to analyze it or work it
out.
That's
what I was trying to say.
That's what I meant. I'm not suggesting it's kusala.
No.
When the pancha and the proliferation about, you know, was there self, was there not self? I wasn't suggesting it was kusala, but it's kind of like the ditti situation yesterday that we were describing, and Jonathan pointed out, if one hadn't heard the Dhamma, there wouldn't be
conditions for that
ditti, although it depends on what other beliefs one clings to.
Conditions some ditti that wouldn't otherwise arise.
More akusala than the Dhamma. Hearing the Dhamma, there would be more akusala when I listen now to this. No?
You can't say the Dhamma conditions akusala or ditti. It's the wrong understanding of Dharma that accumulates,
If the person hadn't come across the Dhamma, they might be pursuing some other religion or form of belief.
That's true.
So.
Of ditti.
Yeah,
like you mentioned about your sisters.
But usually it's always thinking about the past.
The past, yeah.
And the future.
What about the past, yeah?
No, and the future.
Yeah.
That is not the thinking or the understanding about whatever appears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
try to find out about the past, whether it's what kind of Dhamma.
But when, after you hear Dhamma, you also think about the present.
Thinking about present realities.
It always thinks.
Yeah.
It's good to know how much attachment there is to thinking too. Not just the object, but to actually thinking, like, even now.
So that is good. Kusala, that is good.
Again, trying to find out the past.
What you just said.
Yeah, the past.
Yeah.
It's gone completely.
It's gone completely, yeah.
Yes, but in my case, I hardly think about my past. I don't care. It's not my habit.
Even just a moment ago?
My past.
It's past already when it's my past.
Yeah, and it's mine. It's still the self. The point that I was just making was
that it's good to know that even now there's so much attachment to thinking, not just the objects of thinking, but thinking itself.
Yeah.
Thinking. Keep on thinking. That it's useful. See?
No, I think what Nina means is that you suggested that it's helpful.
When there's understanding, it's helpful.
If it's attachment, if there's understanding of attachment, understanding of clinging to thinking now, it's helpful.
And that would be kusala.
At that moment, it's kusala. But if one tries to work it out or know, then it's not kusala.
So any working out is not kusala. So it's just akusala.
Yeah, just.
You just want to know the name. You just want to know what it's called. Akusala, akusala.
No, also the nature, the real nature.
You cannot know the nature by saying that it's akusala, akusala.
Yeah.
It's only thinking.
It's thinking.
And it's gone. So it cannot be known exactly whether it's what.
Yeah. Is this among the Panchaka Dhammas?
The name.
The deluding, deluding Dhammas. Because we're going to discuss this, but we haven't yet.
Whenever there's taking akusala for kusala, like thinking that, just thinking about whether it's kusala or akusala, thinking that's useful, it is Vanchaka Dhamma, because taking it for something useful or productive, actually it's just clinging to the story, clinging to thinking at that moment.
It's always, all instances for someone who's never heard the Dhamma, and it's quite common that people who haven't heard the Dhamma take what is kusala for kusala. I mean, right, wrong for right, right for wrong. Is it always vanchaka dhamma in those cases also? Cheating dhamma? Wouldn't cheating would be in relation to development of understanding?
I think it depends how you would like to define it, but any moment now when one assumes that it's kusala because it's like thinking about the Dhamma, but actually it's just a kind of clinging there, then it is like a cheating Dhamma at this moment. No need to talk about those who've never heard the Dhamma.
No, you were just saying any moment.
Like now.
Mistaking a kusala for kusala, it's vanchaka Dhamma.
But in this particular context, yes.
What about if you don't mind or care whether it's called vanchaka or not?
But then it is taught, there is a
concept and the Dhamma in
better the... Better understand the characteristics as yourself instead of trying to know.
It's not like a fixed group or fixed category or anything like that. It's just a pointer, a helpful reminder, but if one tries to work out exactly what the label, the term means, then one misses the point about just understanding what is mistakenly confused for kusala at this moment.
And trying to understand the term, can that be vanjaka? See? Yeah, because it seems like we really want to understand, but actually it's I.
But it can be just attachment.
No, but when there's the understanding of reality, it's not vanjaka. But when it's not, it's vanjaka. Very, very fine. Very, very subtle.
Can you say that again, please?
Yeah, please.
Is that what children
are like? It's
so fast, huh? Please.
Because we hear about Vanchaka Dhamma, so we think that, this is the first one or this is the second one. But actually, at the moment of trying to find out whether it's Vanchaka or whether it's the first one or the second one or what is the detail, at that moment, it is Vanchaka itself, because one is assuming that considering about what is Vanchaka is kusala, but it isn't, because it's just clinging to the story about Vanchaka. It's just thinking about what the word means or what the category is. One thinks it's productive, but it's not, because there's no understanding at that moment of Dhamma that appears.
Just thinking about past Jesus.
No longer present.
Well, I don't know what the list is.
Better.
No, that's what I was going to say. It sounds like best not figure it out. Best not. You could just sort of worry. Not worry. You could worry it. You know, think about it a lot. And well, is this that or is this that? And better to just
try to fit one's experience.
Yeah,
to
exactly.
The list. And it's actually more clinging to me than it's about me. And
that's right.
How many of this list I have.
And that is Vanchaka.
That is Vanchaka.
Yeah, I can see that. So I like when you say just understand what's mistakenly taken for kusala.
So it's the same actually as clinging to thinking of any classification in the Abhidhamma, whatever it is, because it's gone already.
When Panya knows, it knows whether it is what kind of akusala by then. But if we try to find it out, it's impossible because it does not appear. Like sammasati. People just say sammasati and try to find out what is the characteristic of sammasati. But if sammasati does not ever arise, who knows? Only thinking about it. But as soon as it arises, the right understanding of what one has heard about it is there. Very natural, just very rapidly, and then gone. Very natural.
We need to hear more about very naturally. Maybe
like now, exactly.
Yeah. But regarding the classifications in the Abhidhamma, I think generally they are helpful for understanding more about present moment realities.
Yes.
But of course they can be considered wrongly. You can never say that thinking about some classifications is good and others is not good. The Vanchaka Dhammas, if we try to think about Vanchaka Dhammas, then we're just thinking about past moments of jitta. Whereas if you take the classification of, say, khandhas, it's different altogether because it's about present moment.
Yeah, in my case, I do not think so much about past and not so much about future, because if I think about my future, there will be lots of worries. So in that case, it's not my practice, but I think about marana, marana anusati. Then the worry gone.
Means that just think about today, it's not just today, it's this moment.
The question is always, is the thinking now with attachment, with understanding? So simply not thinking about the past doesn't mean you're left with kusala thinking. It can be thinking with attachment about now, about today, about the future with attachment. Whether you're thinking about the past with attachment or thinking about the future attachment, you're still thinking with attachment.
No thinking about the visible object or the photo of the visible object seen this morning or this later or the sound heard earlier or the words discussed yesterday or...
Yeah, and the photos you took, never look at them?
Everything concerns with this moment. But there are many conventional, wide thinking we can engage. Yeah? So marana anusati is one of the way. It can be sort of contemplated or in terms of this moment, or say in terms of more much sort of conventional way.
I don't know what you mean by more on after some.
Because once I said that, Buddha asked monks, and they, I'm contemplating my marana, which may take in the next 3 days. Then Buddha, no, that is good. 2 days, not enough. Just 1 day, not enough. Just 1 hour, not enough. Just think about death in this moment. So,
But it's only marana sati if it's kusala. So just because it's thinking about death doesn't make it kusala.
It's a kind of wise
the object
thinking.
Of thinking cannot make the citta kusala. It's only if kusala citta takes.
There are many ways of thinking in a wise manner. Yeah, and marana anusati is, I think, one of the ways.
I don't think so, because therefore you could say, let's think about death, let's think about Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha.
It's just a condition. It's my habit. Yeah?
Yeah, but I'm just saying that.
No, I'm not saying it will lead to my enlightenment.
No.
No.
Obviously not, because it's samatha, not vipassana. But on the question of kusala, and the same with the vanchaka dhammas, even if we think about, is it the real thing or the cheating thing, only if the characteristic of kusala citta is known and the ability to distinguish kusala from satala kusala, could the answer be known anyway? And I think it's the same with thinking about any of these subjects that are listed as objects of samatha. Thinking about them doesn't make it kusala. They can be thought about either with kusala or with akusala, satala kusala.
So what's your point?
Well,
your point is it's just a samatha, matter of samatha. And there is no guarantee that it involves kusala. It probably mostly akusala is what you're trying to say. Isn't that right?
Well, I don't know, can't know another person's, only the person themselves can know the answer.
And I would like to make a point that it's like when we were talking about metta the other day, there's a difference between just naturally having metta, being helpful, being kind, taking care of people, and versus knowing that metta is a kusala state and trying to have metta or reflecting on metta in order for metta to develop. And the same way with marana sati, even though it's like common object during the day, there's a difference between naturally just reflecting briefly on shortness of life versus thinking it's good to have maranasati and so trying to think about death in order to have more kusala.
Yeah.
So it's different.
See, one of the tapes Kunsuchi is mentioning about one monk, he loves developing metta as a meditation, yeah? And he doesn't want to have any guest because they disturb his practice, you know?
No metta.
Yeah. It all depends on individual inclinations, because for me, it's metta is not easy at all. I really do not understand the real characteristics of metta. It's so hard.
So the point is, whether it's one's talking about metta or maranasati or any other object of samatha, if there's no understanding of what metta is or what calmness is, or if there's no understanding that quality like metta when it arises in daily life or the wise reflection naturally, then when one puts aside some time, definitely it's not metta or maranasati.
Kusala jittas have a quality, and akusala jittas have a quality. So if that quality is known, then it doesn't really matter whether it's metta, karuna, dana, sila, or samatha. In fact, samatha development is knowing the quality of kusala when it arises. But I think a lot of people have the idea that if they are thinking about subject A, B, or C, which is among the 40, then it's much more likely to be kusala. But I'm not sure that's right.
Could we say, John, that someone who
actually has that strong inclination to have one of those 40 objects as object for samatha development is he who has all levels of kusala, very high level of kusala already?
The accumulated tendency that's important is the tendency for kusala rather than thinking about subject A, B, or C.
And it's very easy to forget that dharmas are conditioned, so whether there's reflecting now, whether there's helping someone now, or whether there's reflecting on death or anything else, it depends on conditions. It's not anyone who can select or choose anything at all, at any time, at any moment, because each dharma is conditioned at this moment. So we might think, oh, now I'm going to reflect on death. Actually, no I who can select anything.
Well, when you are aware of a given reality, yeah? Are you concerned with whether it's a kusala or akusala? No, I'm not. It's not my concern. My concern is knowing reality. I don't care whether it's... Oh, I don't pay attention whether it's kusala or not.
There's no choice, right? I mean, because if kusala is the object of
understanding, the kusala character can appear.
If there's caring or minding, then it's back to what we were talking about and the cheating dharmas. It's because one thinks that it's useful to care, but actually caring is just clinging to oneself, minding, not understanding with detachment.
Why can you say that? I think caring is very important.
Caring about what kind of cheetah there is at this moment is clinging, caring, wishing it were kusala, not understanding with detachment of whatever.
And actually, when you say that caring is very important, what do you mean?
I meant caring other people.
Right, in what way is it important?
it's important because I do not have much sort of consideration of other people. It's my nature.
It's better than not caring. It's better than not caring.
Right, but sometimes it sounds almost like it's more important, because at any time understanding reality is the most important.
But without parami, it's impossible to understand reality right then. Without parami.
10 paramis?
Yeah. There's no way to understand reality right now. Because avijja is always there, and attachment is always there. That's why while one cares for the other at that moment, it's kusala citta.
But it's not necessarily barami.
It depends, because you see that it doesn't mean that every time there is good deeds, then it's barami. We don't mind or care whether it's barami or not. But one can see the danger of akusala, that each day it's there. Almost all the time. And is there any way to be less? When citta is kusala, it's the moment of no akusala.
So you're saying that pandya would encourage kusala at any
pandya
time?
Pandya will work out everything to care or do and more good deeds.
And that other kinds of kusalas like metta have to develop with pandya, because the other paramis are very important to develop with panya.
Then here we have a problem with chicken and the egg.
and panya knows whether there is the wish or wanting to get something in return or not. See, only panya see that I don't care. I will care because I would like to have more kusala. That's wrong. But to see that it's so very difficult to understand reality as it is unless there is more kusala, because otherwise akusala will arise more and more each day. It covers up the truth of whatever appears, rising and falling away all the time. It takes time to understand how much kilesa and ignorance is there. That's why we listen, in order to understand that there's no self, that there's only the big amount of akusala. And it can be eliminated only by great understanding. Otherwise, while one is caring, there can be the wish of wanting something in return. But seeing that everything is nothing, just arise by conditions and then falls away. So the best thing in life is kusala, and the best of all is panya. And we don't have to think before doing anything. It's one's nature, because of right understanding is there.
In conventional terms, we can say that, or can we say that, when one develops sati and panya in daily life, one also think the importance of developing 10 paramis. So don't neglect or development of 10 paramis. Well, it means that if one develops just sati and panya, that's fine. Nothing else is wrong attitude. Can we say that?
But all dharmas are anatta. Even right now, by knowing that one has lots of avijja, ignorance and attachment, that's why one hears more for panya, not for I, to develop, to see reality as it is. Because the eye cannot understand reality at all. But right understanding can. So at moment of understanding, it's the moment of no self and no eye, beginning to see.
And you're saying that sort of development of the idea of non-self helps one
by conditions,
to develop more paramis.
Paramis can only be developed when the mental quality arises anyway. So metta, for example, or patience. It's only if and when metta does arise or patience does arise in the daily life that it can be developed.
So one can understand the point of living. What for? not for akusala, but for more kusala by conditions. And Panya knows that, and Panya works it out. No one is there to do anything at all.
Okay, can I ask a very stupid question? Development of paramis for others' sake or for one's sake?
For the sake of understanding of non-self.
So the important point is just to remember that no one can develop anything, no one can develop understanding, no one can develop metta, no one can develop samatha or any other kusala. So that's why without understanding of reality now that's conditioned, impossible for paramis to develop. To otherwise it's always the idea of, oh, I need more virya or more metta or something, but actually no understanding, so no parami at all.
When you say difficult to have metta, it's just a question of knowing it when it does arise, because there must be accumulations for metta. Can't say have no accumulations for metta, but maybe it's just not known when it arises.
And if one tries to do that, one chika dhamma.
If one goes looking for it, looking for the quality.
Oh, okay, so development of, say, in a very simple manner, can I say that development of satipanya is one side of a coin, and the development of temparami is the other side of the coin, but in fact, in actual development of satipanya, there's no such thing as one side or the other.
They have to develop together. Team effort. You have to develop together, not any one parami missing. Like development of understanding panya. Panya is a parami. There has to be development of satya, truthfulness, truthfulness about reality now, as Ajahn was mentioning. Adhitana, the determination or resolution about what is important, what is the path, virya at the moment of understanding. So all the paramis develop together.
Because you see that the path of the Buddha to enlightenment is on the way of detachment only from the very beginning.
I clearly mentioned that message in my book, and as far as I know, there is no such teaching or religion in Japan. They all teach something about some kind of attachment. You will get such and such, you will get such and such. That's it.
I think all over the world, even in Thailand, yeah, everywhere.
I'm sorry,
No. I'm saying that generally, any kind of religion promotes some kind of attachment. But here it's 100% detachment. 100% means 100%.
And I think that's because of
no self.
I think because of the understanding of no self, little by little.
And attachment is so
crafty, that's why it's the teacher or the master, so that's why even when one's hearing it, it sneaks in like, oh, trying to work this out, trying to find that, finding a way to have marana sati, or let's have a little more metta, or bump up this parami or that, or how about understanding, and oh yes, only this moment, no, thinking about the past. So attachment is the very crafty master. Because I'm talking for anyone, all of us, all of us. Like even now, the lobha sneaks in because, all the time.
Yeah, because actually there's no one. No Tadao, no Sukhin, no Sujin, no Sarah. Yeah.
just different dharmas, conditioned dharmas all the time. When one thinks about, oh, it's my ignorance or attachment, or that person is so wise, or this or that, one misses the whole point of the Dharma, of the teachings.
So is this egocentric?
No, egocentric means ultimate goal of egocentric, it's non-egocentric.
You know that mana can be eradicated only by arahatamaka, the highest degree of enlightenment. It shows up just very little. What is behind is much more than that, greater than that. Every akusala, no matter it's mana or whatever. Today someone think about mana, that person has mana and so on, or other kind of akusala, but actually that which is shown is just very little from that which is accumulated.
This life, yeah, amongst Dhamma friends, it doesn't show up, but next life, it'll clearly...
We don't know.
No, I mean, but...
Depending on right understanding.
Like, for example, in
and
this
accumulation.
Room, yeah. But it's, since it's there, accumulated, there's always a chance.
Because when kusala is accumulated more and more, different habits from before.
So, Tathagata, what Ajahn is saying is that the akusala that manifests is actually just the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, yeah.
Well, because the accumulated tendency is so much greater,
so much, yeah.
But just a little bit of it manifests at any given time.
Yeah.
And I think actually there's a lot of mana manifesting, like even during discussion. Oh, I know that, or just so quick and so little and... So gross.
Even when it's
but
not...
Still not the same as someone that tucks in.
More mana.
It's your problem, it's not our problem.
And then there's the...
Some mana is manifested. When there's the comparison, or I know that
I don't have as much as Texan.
but there's so much
which manifests.
That's manifest.
That which is not manifested is much more.
Well, yes, and even in thinking, there are so many thoughts where one can see that there's mana. Although it doesn't come out of your mouth or doesn't show up in actions, but it's which
even at moment of thinking about Thaksin.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
See,
yeah. Even thinking about
otherwise one wouldn't think about that person like that at all.
But even it's not that person, the other person must be the same.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Or anyone like
that. Or anyone which is not like that.
Mana for sure.
Yeah.
Why doesn't he understand, or why does he say that to me, or why am I told to assume
his
mana?
Why is he saying, speaking like that on the list, or a blessed words or something?
When I think that, already concede, right?
Mana already.
Yeah, because comparing, no. Can you explain?
Like, I've already explained and he still doesn't get it, so why does he say I'm assuming? Actually, there is mana because it's about me
and
I'm important. And yeah.
And I'm important.
Why has he said this to me?
Why is he
and
saying that? Right.
And the frustration that comes with it. That's not mana.
Different
that's dosa, different
conditioned by the mana, because if it's metta is the opposite of mana. When it's metta and one
is just kindly helping, then no concern about the reaction or what the response is or whether he says this or that. But when it's mana and it's me that's important, then minding what the response is and why is he saying that to me. And
so you said that metta is the opposite of mana. Could you elaborate what you've said?
So like if one's, for example, explaining something to someone, like pointing out directions or explaining Dharma, and one's concerned to help and there's friendly goodwill to that person, never mind what the response is, because one just is making that offering, one's just being friendly, trying to help. But when it's mana, then one's concern is for oneself, and if one tries to help and the other person doesn't like it, or they get upset, or they suggest they don't get the point that's made, it's because of mana, clinging to oneself, that there is annoyance or disappointment.
Mana is so very subtle that only the Arahatamaka, the highest degree of enlightenment, can eradicate it. So I think that if there is no panya enough, one might not understand mana at moment of giving too. Because I can give, he's inferior, I'm superior, I'm better in some case or whatever. So mana is so very, very subtle. So it needs panya to understand that since it's so very, very subtle, there should be more than that only, more than just giving. For example, to be friendly, it's the way to not having mana, because can a friend have mana to a friend? Or friend means that everyone is exactly the same. We can just live with that person happily, or we don't annoy it by our manners or speech or whatever. So the one who has less mana is that who is very modest and helpful and treat everyone equal, no matter higher or less, lower. It's not different. It's not important at all. Share the same thing and have nice speech, sweet words or whatever, which can be done to a friend. So at moment of giving, that's why give with many quality of wholesome, not only just give. Give with respect.
You mean here someone who's modest is means someone who has lots of metta
by nature.
By nature, and because he would be having a lot of mana accumulated,
yeah.
But because of metta, and because at the time of metta, there's no mana,
and it can bring more understanding that there's no self, only tattoo. Seeing is tattoo, seeing here and seeing there, no difference, the same exactly, no self, only different. Tattoo, wholesome tattoo or unwholesome tattoo. So by understanding this, the wholesome tattoo arises more often, anywhere, anytime, to anyone.
About mana on the list, when a friend says untruth about Ajahn, untrue.
Mm-hmm. You know, and if someone says something that is untrue about Ajahn, not just on the list or anywhere,
yeah.
But why does one mind? Why does it concern one so much? Why is one so bothered?
Because it's not true. It's a lie.
Would the arahat be bothered or concerned? It's.
If they say a lie about someone else, are we bothered?
If they say a lie about a politician, do we mind? We don't mind at all. It's only because
of
attachment.
A lie is a lie.
Yeah. See? Yeah. It's only because of our clinging, strong clinging.
That's why we see how virtuous the Buddha's teachings is about. Not even very slight akusala should be accumulated.
And we always think the problem is the other people or what they're saying, but actually the problem at that moment is citta. Citta, akusala, yeah.
So it doesn't even have to be a lie, even if it's the truth.
Someone reveals something.
And I think on the mana and the modesty or not minding about the reaction or the response, it's like the example we've discussed before about having a mind like a dust rag, like Sariputta said. So when there's no mana, it's like the mind is like a dust rag. Anything can be thrown at it, and it can be trampled on.
Referring to someone of that level.
I know, but that's showing what the quality is. That's the opposite of mana. When there's mana, everything about me is important. It matters how I'm treated or how people respond to my gift or whether they like the metta that is shown. But when it's more of a mind that is humble or more like a dust rag. So of course none of us have minds like dust rag, but I'm just saying I think it's helpful to reflect, because when it's like the dust rag, like for Sariputta, then never mind what's thrown at it or what comes or what is said about one's teacher or friend or anything else.
In the meantime, develop metta and other kusala, because when there's metta, there's no mana.
But one must be honest, the truth is the truth. Right is right, and wrong is wrong. Because panya is the only reality which can understand what's right and what's wrong.
So what you were talking about, mana and metta and the other qualities, what you are saying fits perfectly in my teaching environment. It's perfectly. Yeah. If I have mana, then I get very bad reaction from my students. If I have metta, even though it's very difficult to teach, if I have patience and metta, they respond very nicely.
Because they know that at those times you're actually concerned for their welfare, trying to help them, whereas when it's mana, it's one's own welfare. So that's the and everyone appreciates kindness.
But without understanding of reality as not self, see, it's impossible not to have mana or any akusala, because right understanding can support the elimination of mana, because there's actually no one at all. It's different by conditions, that's all.
But what I'm saying is it's a kind of wise thinking based on basic understanding of Dhamma. Even at that level of understanding helps me to conduct my teaching in a proper manner.
And that's the way to begin to also understand more about metta when it arises, because when one's concerned about the students and taking care of their needs, it's metta. So that's how metta can accumulate very naturally.
And when right understanding is there, wise attention is there. So all depends on right understanding. To develop more kusala, yes. In order to have more kusala, it needs the understanding of reality.
When there's understanding, there's wise attention together with the understanding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but because of right understanding, so attention is wholesome, wise.
Right. So you weren't talking about understanding and then wise attention towards something else?
When there is no understanding at all, And at moment of listening, considering, that is wise to condition right understanding. So right understanding grows, and when it grows, the wise attention grows too, according to right understanding.
Yeah, wise attention.
So chintamaya panya conditions, bhavanamaya panya,
you're saying that? Yeah, if we don't call it. Yeah, because the point is that the difference between a normal kusala, usual kusala, and kusala with panya, another step higher than ordinary kusala without panya.
When you say wise attention, in terms of chetasikaya, are you referring to manasikara?
Right. Because people care so much about it and try to have wise attention, but without right understanding, cannot be.
So in my class, it's not me who is conducting teaching. It's just chitta chetasika and rupa.
No students.
Chitta chetasikas are always behind whatever appears.
Before you mentioned about the development of sati and panya is highly correlated with development of temparami. Conceptually, I can understand what you are saying, but to be honest, I do not have very clear idea of instances of where these two things are. Work together or help with each other. Could you give me some kind of examples or?
I think we've said that the paramis are developed only when there is understanding. Mm. So it's just one and the same thing. We don't have to think of the paramis as a separate development to development of the standing, but when understanding is developed, the paramis are developed.
Now
because yes.
Like, take the example of virya.
Virya, parami. So if there isn't an understanding of realities, then bound to be an idea of I making an effort, but when there's understanding of realities, then it is the four right efforts that develop naturally. So at this moment of understanding or wise considering, there is right effort, samavayama. So that's why the virya, the parami, without understanding of reality, not just any kind of understanding, but understanding of reality, then the parami of virya cannot develop.
So it's given to the temparamis with non-self.
Yes, with understanding of dharmas.
As non-self. Because if it's the understanding at the level of samatha, no understanding of virya as anatta, as conditioned reality. So they have to develop with understanding of realities as non-self. That's why development of paramis is unique to the Buddha's teaching.
So donation,
Chandra, it's non-self.
Right.
So not expecting any
rewards
either.
Not me.
Yeah.
It's always low for non-self.
But only when there's understanding of a Dhamma. Because not-self is characteristic of Dhammas. Right? Not-self is not some general concept of absence of self.
And what is the
greatest chaga, the greatest dana question?
I think it's a giving up of oneself.
And sharing the dharma.
Oh, okay.
For giving to others, dharma dana is the greatest.
Giving is always giving somebody else.
Yeah, yeah. So So like now, we're all sharing Dharma together and even appreciating others, giving of Dharma. This is also kind of Dharma Dana. Yeah.
So by asking questions, there's a lot of Dana.
No, in my case, it's writing a book, because in Japan there's no way to understand this kind of thinking. So,
but you're writing a book?
Yeah, yeah. But I'm very, very careful. I'm very, very careful in my use of words. Yeah. Very careful.
You're writing a book, but you're here asking questions about Dhamma. For the sake of writing a book? For the sake of yourself, for the sake of understanding.
No, no, it's all based on understanding. For the sake of understanding.
For the sake of Dana.
If I do not have any understanding, it's impossible to write anything which is useful.
Yes, that's important. And yet you can't wait for understanding to perfect before writing.
Could be a few lifetimes.
Becoming enlightened before finishing the book.
I don't think you can take it with you.
You know, Ajahn often explains to us, we don't have to think of the 10 paramis, but any kind of kusalas, body, speech, or mind, and then when there is understanding too, like you visit the family in Cambodia, the poor family, to help them, and when there is understanding, it is parami also, isn't it? Yeah.
But it's always important to develop right understanding. Be attachment to giving and taking it for self.
Yes, exactly.
Question again about
sila parami, because usually one thinks of sila like when one helps an elderly person or shows some kusala through one's behavior, but one knows that actually the meaning of sila is the manner of citta. So any kusala citta is actually kusala sila. So when one's talking about sila parami, can one say that at any moment of kusala, with the development of understanding, that it is sila parami that is being developed? Yeah.
Great. No need to find out whether it's panya or not.
And no need to give some example like helping the poor or show it, because actually any moment of kusala is sila parami when there has been some understanding.
Through body and speech.
Yeah, just having that kind of understanding helps one to have many moments of sila in our daily life. Yeah. Because when we think about sila, we just think refraining from doing something wrong. No, no, there are so many opportunities.
Like now.
Yeah.
Like now. So even when one speaks, anytime one speaks now with kusala citta, it is sila.
It is kusala sila. And
when conditioned by understanding, it is sila parami even now. So all these paramis are about qualities now.
And also Dana Parami.
Like you just said, so it is Dana now.
At the moment of sharing or appreciating the others sharing or helping at this moment, it is Dana Parami. So all the paramis are now. Yeah,
with Viriya Parami, Satya Parami, Adhidana Parami.
Nekama Parami, like at this moment of wise considering or understanding, it's renouncing akusala at this moment. At this moment, any moment of kusala now is Nekama Parami. So all the paramis are about at this moment. No need to wait for another time or metta. All about now.
Is there now Viriya Parami?
I thought that was when you had the sati.
No, that is when I woke up. I said that.
Nine.
Panda is almost like a black hole. It sucks everything, and the essence is just there, you know. So everything fits into this black hole.
Not a bright light.
No.
Opposite.
Yeah. Okay. It could be a white hole, not black. White.
Or nothing.
No, it encompasses everything.
But I think Lopa works more like a black hole.
Could we have Mike? Yeah,
it's true.
Black hole. Avishai as well.
Lopa works like a black hole, sucking everything.
Get the Avishai as well. Black hole.
Yeah. But it shows how important the right understanding is. Yeah, it's the center of everything. It ties all the
ksara. And if there isn't any understanding, one thinks of inequality like nekama or aditana, something out there at another time or another occasion, and not understanding that all the teachings are about this moment.
And we don't need to think about Vinaya or Suttanta or Abhidhamma.
So any
so, right? We don't need to think
about it. No, it's a different level. It's totally different level. Sutta and Vinaya and Abhidhamma are important. Important. It's to do with recoverability. Recoverability. If this kind of talk has gone, 200 years from now, and how can one recover the teaching of the Buddha? And it's not an easy thing to do. But if there is there are still a Tipitaka, then somebody like Kunsuchi be able to recover the original teaching of the Buddha. Yeah. So in terms of recoverability, it's very important to have that kind of sort of vast volumes of teaching.
We were just talking about nekama, right? No, it's not nekama, but anyway, but what about not losing the opportunity to develop understanding?
It's a totally different level. I'm talking about recoverability. How can the teaching, the essence of teaching, can be recovered? How can it be recovered? If there is nothing documented, then there's no way to recover it. And there's a person who recovered it. It's the reason why we come here to listen. So in terms of recoverability, it's very important.
Right.
So you can't neglect.
Again.
or you cannot neglect, or you cannot deny the significance of
that. Significance here is the understanding.
The I know everybody knows it. It's the reason
why. It's the understanding, right? So it's not.
You're Hippocratic.
Why?
Because how can you neglect the significance of Tipitaka? Or just claiming that the essence of the teaching is development of our understanding this moment.
Talk about the Tipitaka. What is Sutta? What is Vinaya? What is Abhidhamma? Before going into what it consists of, what's written inside, what is Sutta? What is Vinaya?
You're trying to say that everything in the significance is at this moment. How 200 years, 300 years from now, who can recover that idea, the essence of teaching?
And what is the purpose of the Tipitaka? So the reader understands life as it is.
You do not understand how lucky we are.
Do you ever realize that you get caught up in the story so much of whatever, Tipitaka, this and that, the books and blah, blah, blah. Do you ever have a second thought of that? You get caught up in that instead of reality now?
To me, it's a very Hippocratic statement.
Why?
Because what's the essence of the Tipitaka? It's this moment. How can we recover that essence without the existence of the Tipitaka?
Do you remember Ajahn keeps saying before that everything is not in the book? Whatever we start in Tipitaka, in the book, or in the tapes and all that, is now.
How could Kunsuchin recover that idea because of the Tipitaka? She didn't want to sit and realize that everything is
No.
She studied extremely carefully with her wisdom.
One has to be careful not to get caught up in that.
I'm not getting caught up.
Yes.
Because I'm just respecting the tradition of Theravada Buddhism. That's it.
Shall we say just the teachings of the Buddha instead of Tipitaka?
That's true. Yes, that's true.
And the Tipitaka, the teachings of the Buddha as
recorded in Tipitaka, that's going to stay even 10, 20, 30,000 years from now, because it will. It will.
Is that what you say again?
The teachings will remain in here. You know, it's not going to get lost. People are always curious to study ancient texts. So it's going to be there. But what's lost is the understanding. And that's why.
And actually, what leads to the loss of the text, to the teachings, is through lack of understanding. When there is no more understanding, first of all, the Abhidhamma Pitaka disappears, and then the Vinaya disappears. So it's the lack of understanding by Buddhists that, according to the text, leads to the disappearance of those teachings. So, and eventually there's a time like the monks just wear a bit of orange cloth, but no one follows any rules at all because no one understands the purpose or the value. So actually the teachings themselves disappear through lack of understanding eventually. But I think Tadao has a good point though, Ajahn, that all the teachings that we find in the Tipitaka and ancient commentaries, and which you helped to have translated in Thai, it's very precious, because for the development of understanding we refer a lot to these texts, and we're very appreciative in English for those commentaries that have been translated, because without them the suttas get misunderstood all the time. So I think when Tadao mentions two aspects, the importance of understanding, but also we're so appreciative that we do have the text to refer to. Could you add anything more to his point?
I think that all about reality is, no matter it's in Vinaya or Sutta or Abhidhamma, shall we call it just the teachings of the Buddha, because in his time it's not arranged, divided into three yet. Because when the monks in the Buddha's time, in the old days, in the earlier time, no rule for monks yet. See, only the teaching. So why come the Vinaya? See, we have to understand that because of the kilesa. And even we are talking about Abhidhamma, and if we read Vinaya, it is the same, but it talks much more about defilement or akusala, even at moment of reaching out a level of akusala, holding it, another level, put it, and then take it. See? Different level of akusala, more details. That suits the monkshood or the monk's life. But for us, if we read Vinaya, we will understand better and better about right behaviors. So all are the teachings of the Buddha for every person, everything.
Yeah, the point I'd like to make is that we have to respect to those who have kept the teaching, because at the time of the Buddha, when he attained Parinibbana, then there was Ananda. Then about 500 years from his Parinibbana, and the actual teaching was almost going to disappear. For instance, in Sri Lanka, there was a big famine, and all the monks are dying. And by then, everything was memorized, learned by heart. And only at that time, text was written. Yeah. So we have to somehow show great respect to those who have kept. Yeah.
Because of the understanding of the arahats at that time, that it was maintained, because those who followed after the Buddha who didn't have right understanding were creating schisms and other branches and other teachings. And so it's actually the, when one pays respect to the Sangha who've preserved the teachings, it is the right understanding of the Arya Sangha.
For example, there was no Ajahn Suchin here to teach us. I mean, the interpretation that we hear and understand, we know what's out there. Would anyone rightly could be said to be appreciating the Tipitaka? Can anyone really appreciate the Buddha's teachings with wrong understanding?
We'll ask these people. I can answer your question.
Could you give him a microphone?
I mean, someone who has wrong understanding, could he really appreciate?
Possibly.
And I'm asking you.
No, thank you. I'm not answering you.
So that's why we have to understand the three gems, see, the Buddha and the teachings and the Aryan Sangha. So why do we pay respect? Because of right understanding that we can have from learning about the teachings very carefully to understand. We know that the Buddha is so great, so high, rather than anyone else. Where are we and where is him? See, much different. That's why we study the teachings so very carefully, because each word, like Dhamma, the Thai would say, oh, I know, I understand, I listen to Dhamma, I study Dhamma. But actually, it's not Dhamma, because they just read the word, remember the number, but no understanding about reality right now as Dhamma that Buddha taught at all. That's why we have to understand each word as it is, like Dhamma. And the Dhamma Ratna, see, not all Dhamma, the Akusala Dhamma cannot be the gem or the Dhamma Ratna. So we understand what is the refuge, the island, or that which can be help, can help us to understand the teachings. That's why we have to understand what is Dhamma and what is Dhamma Ratana. So when there is the Dhamma Ratana, just to be Sangha Ratana, it does mean that just study, but it's the way to become Sangha Ratana, the last gem too. Otherwise, there would be only the teachings, but no one can understand the teaching at all.
And we know that it's quite a common view that the Sangha Ratna is referred to monks, not the Aryan. So that shows that there's no real understanding of Dhamma and Buddha.
And when we say that Dhamma at the end will be lost, it's lost for those who do not understand completely right now. We do not have to wait for other time.
I think Tadao made one other point.
One other quite good point was that even if it seems that there's no understanding around, no right understanding, if the Tipitaka and commentaries are preserved, then maybe someone like he gave the example of you may actually be able to read and appreciate it. But if the Tipitaka and commentaries is not there, then no chance anyone can come along to understand it. Is that your point, Adal?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and not only me. Remember that, not only me. Anyone who can understand the teaching.
No, it's hard to find such person with
that's
wisdom.
That's why there should be more study.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
it's
why
like
we have more and more study.
So would you agree that unless there's someone who understands it, the text
is just text?
Of course, text is just text.
I've never heard among this group any suggestion that there isn't great value in the Tipitaka, and that the Tipitaka should never be looked at. But what I have heard repeatedly is that the value of the Tipitaka lies within the level of understanding of the reader. So I think that's why Ajahn is repeatedly saying it's understanding. It's just understanding. It depends on understanding. And yes, we're very fortunate that we have a Galyana Mit that is so generous and helpful. But I've never heard any suggestion that there's no value in the Tipitaka. So I don't think we should ever suggest that or that the Tipitaka is not necessary. But the point is that it lies within the understanding of the reader that the applicability of what's in the Tipitaka is now.
And if there is no understanding now, or if it is the wrong understanding of
the text that's taught, that it's already lost. The Tipitaka is already lost.
That's why we study each word carefully. Not our word, but the word from the Buddha in Tipitaka.
So, any conventional
pariyatti?
No, comment. I understand what you're trying to say. Conventional pariyatti itself doesn't mean anything.
Totally unrelated topic.
From the first day when we were talking about Pakatu Upanisya Pachya, and just at the end briefly, we were talking about any dharmas as conditioned. So rupa, such as visible objects, a visible object can be conditioned by Pakatu Upanisya Pachya for sanya now. So usually we would say it's the seeing of visible object, but the visible object itself is Pakatu Upanisya Pachya for sanya. Would you say
when
a little
we talk more about Pakatu Upanisya Pachya and the rupa, it does mean that only one moment of experience is rupa, would be Pakatu Upanisya, because nisya pachya means like habits, many, many times. Yeah.
So it's what it's referring to when you mention
visible object as Pakatu Upanisya Pachya. What you mean is many moments of seeing of visible object. Mm-hmm. So that visible object is, but it would seem that it's the seeing of visible object that is the habit or the condition, but the visible object itself, that one
for
that
example,
is more.
Are you used to cold weather? See?
Are we used to?
Cold weather.
Cold weather.
Oh, yeah.
See? Pakatu Upanisya Pachya.
But there it would be referring to the
experience of cold, like the experience of warm and as a condition.
And the object is rupa.
And the object is rupa.
So, would you say, Tan, then that
if there's frequent experience of a certain temperature and there's liking it, and that's accumulated, at any other time when that temperature is experienced, there's liking it.
And you look for it.
And you look for it.
Okay.
And it has to be the
experiencing of the cold, because if it's just cold that's not experienced, then it cannot condition anything. So when we say it's the cold that is conditioned, but it must be the experiencing of cold.
Because pakatupanisya, the pachupana must be citta and cittasika.
It must be, but the pachaya itself must
it
be the...
It can be pachaya.
Must be the cold or the experiencing of cold. Or
pachaya of citta.
Citta.
The experiencing.
But for the pachaya, the experiencing of cold or just the cold itself?
How many kinds are there of Upanishya Pachaya?
Three.
So let's talk about one by one. Yeah? For example, the first one is Aramana Upanishya Pachaya, which means the object.
Right.
Now we can see that the object which is desirable can be the Aramana. And since it's always frequently experienced, it becomes the Upanishya Pachaya, our habits to like, to search, to look for it, to be happy with it. So there are two now, Aramana Upanishya Pachaya and Upanishya Pachaya. And the last one
is
Pakati Upanishya Pachaya. The second one is Anantara Upanishya Pachaya.
Yeah, we haven't had that.
Anantarupa Nisya means the Anantara Pachaya, the succeeding citta all the time, from moment to moment. Each moment when the citta has completely fallen away, it conditioned the next one. And that Pachaya is Anantara Pachaya, which conditioned the next one to arise. But since it is strong enough to condition the arising of Dhamma, see, so it is Anantarupanisya Pachaya. So now Aramanupanisya and Anantarupanisya, and the last one is Pakatupanisya. Whatever.
So Pakatupanisya would include the Rupa also?
The experience of Rupa, like the example.
But not the Rupa.
Cold or hot.
But not the Rupa.
Well, there has to be the experience of it, because it cannot be just cold or hot.
No, of course, there has to be. But at that moment, only the experience is Pakatupanisya Pachaya, not the Rupa itself. Is the cold Pakatupanisya Pachaya? Cold is always only Aramanupanisya Pachaya.
It's like Asiya Anusiya. Talk about both wholesome and unwholesome accumulation. But when we talk just about anusaya, it means only akusala. So when we talk in general about pakatupanisaya, we don't talk specifically about particular one. But when we just talk about aramanupanisaya pachaya, we pinpoint aramana.
I think, right, so
under Aramana, it's just like the object, just the object, but when it's Pakatupanisya Pachaya, it's the experiencing of cold, because cold without experiencing, so it's the experience of that cold that conditions the citta, the kusala or akusala.
That's why we have different like or preference. Some like coffee and some like other things, see?
And that was why I brought it up, because the other day, just in
passing, she mentioned, rupa, but that's why I wanted to clarify this experience of rupa.
I have one very basic question, which is about pain. And pain is generally regarded as vipaka, is it right?
Pain itself or the feeling pain?
No. Pain itself is vipaka,
pain.
Isn't it?
Yeah, like painful bodily feeling.
Vipaka. So, accompanied painful by bodily feeling is experienced by which door? Which door?
Body door. Accompanied by unpleasant bodily feeling.
So the pain, what we refer to as the pain, is the unpleasant feeling.
Well, through the body door.
Through the body door.
I thought it's somehow through the mind door. That was my...
That is pain. Through body.
I need a clarification. So every vipaka cittas arise one of the five sense doors. Is it correct?
That's why we have to know the function of citta, how many functions the vipaka can perform.
How many?
How many functions are there?
First four senses is just kusala and akusala vipaka.
The function of citta and jitta. Citta arises to perform the function of seeing, hearing, smelling, the five, and patisanti and bhavanga. So vipaka can perform the function of patisanti and bhavanga, and seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and also sampatichanna, santirana, and tathalabhana, that's all. And jutti.
Okay. Now I'm excluding others.
The hardness or heat doesn't have that value of painfulness that comes with the vedana, the feeling.
Here is the point I'm trying. So could you elaborate? So it's just a heat or pressure or that's
hardness.
It.
Hardness, softness.
Which we perceive as pain or
because of the painful feeling. Because of the unpleasant feeling.
So the body door, it's a painful feeling. Chetana? In terms of
Chetasika, vedana. Yes.
But there's no such thing as painful vedana.
Unpleasant feeling.
Or painful vedana. Arrive through the body.
Body?
Through the body door. It must be either
pleasant or unpleasant.
Okay, so
vedana with that chitta.
There is always the quality of being painful.
It's the result of karma.
Right. And that because of the experience of that particular hardness at that moment. So because of karma, there is the bodily experience of that particular hardness or heat, like if you touch warm glass, no painful feeling, but if you touch the cooker, then what we call pain because of the experience of that particular hot temperature through the body sense. Just one moment.
Without body sense, there can never be such feeling.
So if someone holds you on by the arm, a certain degree of pressure can be pleasant, and then it increases and increases, and then it becomes what we will call painful. But it's still just pressure, hardness and pressure being experienced through the body sense.
But however, can we say that what we think is sort of a pain, is mostly experienced through the mind door?
Because of so many
thinking processes through the mind door with dosa about that experience, one moment of experience with painful bodily feeling, and then so many mind door processes following.
So in a sense, there is no pain at the body sense.
There is.
No, it's an extreme form of pressure
The object
object.
Of that jitta is
not pain.
Yeah.
It's heat, cold, yeah, motion, yeah. Pressure, but the feeling that arises okay. With it.
Okay.
And so, this is true for the arahats or the Buddha too, still
so through
painful
the mind
bodily
door,
feeling.
We interpret that object as pain.
Right.
Thinking with dosa about it.
Can mind or citta experience hardness and softness? After the series of the process of the five sense, one of each, there must be bhavanga. And after that, the first mind or process must experience the same object of the sense door.
And there's dosa before thinking that it's pain. This, as soon as there's bodily unpleasant feeling, there's dosa.
Mm-hmm. Right. There's the experience in the mind, or
the experience of that hardness or that temperature, and then more mind or processes beginning to think about the impression of it, and then eventually thinking about the concept of it. So more and more dosa accumulated.
Even at the body doorway, after the body consciousness arises with painful feeling, only 3 moments after that, that is at domanasa. Not pain, but domanasa. That's why pain, painful feeling, bodily painful feeling, is different from mental painful feeling. Which one is hard to bear? Pakatu panisya pachya.
Depends on accumulations. Yeah. For some people, that's the actual,
the physical pain, which is really hard to bear. For some, it's all the dosa and that follows. Yeah, unpleasant mental feeling. When we were talking the other day about which objects one has a lot of attachment for, and you were mentioning visible object and not sound and this and that, and actually, for me, tangible object is a lot of attachment to tangible object, a lot of aversion when it's painful, bodily feeling, for example. I think we mind a lot about tangible objects.
And you, Kun-en, what object? Pakatu Prisya Paja for. Through what doorway?
No, but visible object or.
Oh,
sound
visible
or
through which door?
Which sense door? Which microphone? Which
sense door is one most concerned about?
I'd say. Bodily feeling. Tangible.
The same.
Because actually, visible object, of course, has so much
attachment because there's visible object appearing all the day, but taste is just at certain times. But tangible object is also common.
Well, and I was. For me, I had to decide between tangible object and. Sound.
Sticks and stones can break my bones.
Of course, a lot of attachment to all of them.
Yes, yes.
If it's the sound, if it's too loud or too quiet, or one's
little clicking noises, things like that.
By book.
Yes. I've always sort of felt very sensitive to sound.
This is the most, and what is the least?
Deaf baby.
Through what are we?
Still.
For me, it tastes not so much.
I can.
So which one is the last one?
Odor or taste. I think odor the last and taste the next to last.
For you?
For me, the most is visible object and the last is odor.
Odor.
The last is?
Odor.
Odor, yeah.
In Brahma world, there is no body sense,
right,
and no tongue sense, and then no sense.
Right. Only visible and object and sound.
There's no food there?
No need to cook. No need to cook.
The result of good karma.
Oh my God.
You're going to have to wash away.
Just idle and idle to hear the Buddha's teaching.
I'd be very happy. No need
to waste time thinking about food or anything
else. I love it. And take the picture.
Oh yeah. Less pictures to take.
Very nice pictures.
Yeah. I like to eat it.
Through Ida.
Yes.
He cooks very well.
But he cleans through Ida.
And then he takes a picture. It's so nice.
Picture is Ida.
Ida.
Yeah.
Like just the picture of it.
Yeah, I saw Constantine's one of the talks talking about all these heavenly planes. Yeah, then I got the impression that in one of them there's no
only
food.
Brahma, only
Brahma. I thought, it's not pleasant place to live.
But they got the six planes, heaven, six planes, you have all five.
And heavenly
but
food.
Only tasty food.
Heavenly food is very good.
Did you try it?
Tell us about heavenly food.
But it must be much better.
Refined. Suck up.
No pet.
My pet.
There's a delicious Indian restaurant in Vancouver called Heavenly.
Oh, I see. Is it?
Sure. Good.
Yeah, it must be very heavenly because they said that some people often ask that whether they sort of respected their ancestors with the offering of food and consider that, no, for them it's not worth eating. Our food is not worth eating. There are much better food to consume there.
So, I don't too.
Idol and body door both.
Yeah.
That really probably, I think, idol because so common.
Like,
is that the one
like even now, it's so much concern with what is seen all the time.
That's
and
true.
How much attention to the body door?
Yeah, more to the idol for sure. Yeah, I'm probably the same, although I'm bothered by certain sounds terribly. So.
Yeah, I like things.
This is why idol was given first in the teachings
too, because it's there all the time, and actually we have no idea how much attachment even now, each moment, to what is seen.
Until this moment is object of awareness and right understanding, any object.
Yeah, because I've asked all the questions I had wanted to ask you, but the important thing I learned is, as usual, is this moment, importance of this moment. It's
because Dharma is now.
Actually, we can say the entire Tipitaka,
all the teachings, is now.
You mean 100% agree?
Mm-hmm.
That's very important, though. I remember
when I started listening to Ajahn, I'd listen and we'd talk about now and seeing and all these things, and then I'd leave and that would be out there in a little parcel somewhere, what I'd heard, go on living a conventional life and conventional thoughts, and it takes a long time to turn.
We think we know it.
And actually, we say we think it's clear, but there have to be so many reminders one has to hear, and it's forgotten so quickly. And if one reads a text, like in the Abhidhamma Sutta, so easy to forget, it's actually about now.
Yeah, reminders are very important.
Very important.
Yeah, without hearing reminders, there can't be the right kind of consideration of the teachings.
Because only right understanding now will bring one along to present moment.
Without reminders, the book study will be off the point.
You cannot say that.
Yes, because you just said yourself
that what you appreciated was the reminder that it's the present moment. So
if you have basic understanding, everything can be a reminder.
But it isn't the fact, that's the point. We forget. We need the reminder.
I don't agree with one thing.
Well, I think you just implied you did, because you said what you appreciated was the...
I appreciate it means that everybody knows that the most important thing is being aware of this moment, seeing reality as they are. And because of our accumulation of ignorance, we need reminder from time to time. But anything can be a reminder, is what I'm trying to say.
So the
reminder become a reminder, no doubt. No doubt.
Yeah, anything can be a reminder, but I find it helps to read Dhamma reminders on the listening to the recordings, on the DSG, Nina's wonderful transcriptions of what Ajahn has said and translations. And without that, certainly other things can and are reminders, but not as frequently.
All the reminders we dependent on association with the good friend is what it comes down to.
Friends can be a reminder, could be a reminder. When you see somebody,
bad friends remind you about
the reality. Yeah, then you can see how you can see the fear of or danger of kusala, and it reminds how important to develop kusala.
So that time the good friend is your own panya.
Right. And that's what it comes down to. When there is
More understanding, no matter whether one's reading the newspaper or watching TV, there can be reminders any time, because the real good friend is the understanding of the teaching.
Sikara, it's called the yoniso manasikara.
Yeah, no matter the subject or the topic or what one's reading.
Even politics. Can be discussing politics,
and awareness or understanding can arise any time at all. Yeah.
And then at that time there is Tipitaka in the
discussion on politics or in the newspaper, because there is that yoniso manasikara.
John, do you remember that?
Of the Buddha. But the only thing about the Tipitaka, thinking like one should read, but what about the understanding of the meaning of the word?